Oh, hello and welcome to LSC Share Talk. Conker's Corner here. It's Peter. I've got the pleasure of speaking with Stephen Larratt, otherwise known as Mr. 88E on Twitter. Stephen has done more than 600 hours research on 88 Energy before he took the plunge to invest in it, and he's shared that information with numerous others who have gone on to make tens of thousands regarding their investment return on investing in 88E. Hello, Stephen. How are you today, sir?
I'm not too bad, Conkers. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad, chap. I'm ready and raring to go for our interview. It's been a nice day in Leicestershire. Not that I've seen much of it today. I've been doing a few podcasts, but more importantly, I've got you here, and I know you've got lots of wisdom to share with our LSE Share Talk listeners. So,
sounds good.
Yeah. First of all, Steve, yep. I'm going to get through these questions because I know you're a man with a fountain of knowledge and you've got lots of stuff to share. I've got some questions I've got for you, which I want to get through so that our listeners get a little bit of background on you, how you get to a decision regarding what stocks you buy and how you buy them, and what your feel is for the markets. So I'm going to start firstly, if you can share a little bit about your background with our audience, please.
Well, background, I might as well start obviously at the beginning. Basically, can't go into too much detail about where I used to work, but effectively I had to be analytical in that job, find things that weren't necessarily out there for everyone to see. So I basically had to read between the lines, gather and find information on things that people didn't necessarily want me to know. So from that sort of point of view, I was very sort of analytical, and people at work were doing stocks and shares and they made a bit of money off it. I came into some money, and one of my first investments was Rockhopper.
Yep.
And made quite a bit of money off that. And then I thought, wow, this is brilliant. Then I started looking at other sort of shares and quickly realized nothing was going to become, you know, of the high risk, high reward sort of thing on the side of oil.
Yes.
So I started looking at sort of safer, longer term investments for that money. Okay. So one of the first things, I sort of sat back and had a chat with a few people, and I put my sort of main investment money in a company called Melrose. It's MRO on the ticker.
I know that one, yeah.
And they basically buy assets, do them up, sell them on.
Yeah.
So it, almost like the guy in Pretty Woman.
Yes.
So...
Yeah. So you did MRO, you did Rockhopper, you reinvested that into MRO.
Yeah, and...
So that was 2009-10, you started that.
Yeah, around that sort of time, just before...
Yeah.
Ballpark, I ain't got the dates in front of me, but okay. it was quite a while ago.
Yeah.
My other sort of trading pot, I split it sort of 70-30... because then I could have a bit of fun, because it was pure profit, basically.
Yeah.
My original investment, I had more than enough there, and I was happy to leave it in the FTSE 100 stock.
Yeah.
And again, sort of, I did a lot of background research on sort of the board of directors, what they do, how they go about and conduct the business. And, you know, it's not like an oil stock where it can go up, you know, 1,000-2,000% overnight.
Yeah.
You know, and I knew it was a long-term thing, but I had a bigger pot of money to sort of lose, if you like.
Yeah.
So I started looking at other companies and sort of utilized a smaller pot of money to try and make money to add to my bigger pot of money.
Yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
So... there was a couple of stocks that I got into. LGO was one.
Yep.
One was called Gold Oil. I doubled my money there, sliced the money, took my original investment out, and then unfortunately that company went under.
Right.
And that was a, you know, a quick lesson learned in that company.
Yeah, but you already de-risked and took your initial investment out of that one, didn't you?
Yeah, that's it. So, you know, yeah, that's it. As soon as the stock goes up, I'm happy at a certain level. You know, the higher the risk, the quicker you want to sort of potentially take my money out.
Yes, yeah.
So overnight it doubled. It went from 1.5p up to about 2.8p.
Yeah.
I believe it was.
Yeah.
So took out the money and got out of there. Then unfortunately the company sort of failed.
Right.
So, you know, lesson learned there. If you're going to protect your profits, make sure the company is still investable at that point in time. Check out the board of directors. Then obviously I've started looking at other companies, Greg to the Bakers.
Yeah.
They had something called Pastygate.
Yes. Remember it well.
Yeah, basically, they just had some bad press, and then overnight they reduced the share price absolutely a stupid amount drastically for what it was, because everything was easily resolvable, and they had an issue with some sandwich fillings as well. There wasn't enough in the sandwiches, so people were sort of complaining about that. So just a bit of bad press.
Yeah.
Overnight, the share price depressed. I got in just below £4. And the reason for that is sound business plan, scale the businesses up. They do, obviously, pasties, pies, and bits and bobs, well-known brand. So I knew the company was going to be there for a long sort of period of time. But by obviously reading through the old RNS data, they were sat in talks and negotiations with Iceland.
Yes.
It was basically a case of they were going to freeze the pies. So there's no baking, there's no shops, there's no wages, there's literally no overheads at all. And the product was just going to basically come out of the factory, and instead of being cooked and sold, it was just going to go into a box, frozen, given to Iceland, then Iceland do all their own distribution. So very sound business model. And I'm sat there thinking, if they're sat there in negotiations, it doesn't matter whether or not they get 10 pence profit per item or 50p profit per item.
Yeah.
Profit's going to be profit.
Yeah.
And because there's no distribution network to worry about, it's already in place. It was going to be sort of a sound investment at that time. I sat there, I watched it go up to £10 per share.
Wow.
And yeah, I sort of pulled out my money at that point in time because it had started to sort of flatten off on the rise, and then sort of sat there and watched it go over £12. But then at that point in time, started becoming a bit bored, basically. Put my money, some of it into Lloyds, obviously after the banking sort of scandals and everything.
Yeah.
And put some into MRO again. So I sat there and I was like, right, I'm bored, but at the same point in time, I enjoyed making the money on the sort of oil play. Obviously Rockhopper, you know, went off to find the next one. Came across the story of Tangiers Petroleum and how they unfortunately didn't hit anything on their drill, and then obviously saw the business transformed into 880.
Yeah.
And sort of sat there and decided to do a bit of research on the company, and then a bit of research sort of went into a lot of research.
Indeed.
And then it sort of just scaled up, and before I knew it, I was sort of sat there looking at drill data from all the other drills in the area. I was looking at historical geology records. I was looking at all the National Geographic survey had done.
Yeah.
And from all of that, I was able to basically put an image of what was under the ground.
Yeah.
What was where everything should be, the lay of the land, where the traps are, where the spill points would be, and I was able to accurately work out what the different type of rock structure was.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a lot of investigation work, but with obviously the wonderful World Wide Web now, you can sit there and you can work things out as long as there's data out there to do research on. So, and thankfully Alaska has got a wonderful website and they've got all of this information and knowledge on there. So some of the drill reports are sort of 700 pages long, but you know what they hit when they hit it by obviously where they put in casings for the drills.
Yeah.
So you knew when they were going to go into sort of the next sort of pressure point, whether it be gas or oil in play, mm-hmm. and you knew by what they were detailing, what loggings they were doing, what depths they were doing certain aspects of.
Yeah.
So that coupled with obviously information from sort of other areas within Google, I was able to pick up, you know, a lot of knowledge, roughly what the total organic content would be, depth, the pressure of the wells, and then obviously from that I was able to work out sort of very, very close to what the company reported was in place for the oil.
Yeah, indeed.
So, yeah. I mean, I'm still sort of stunned by how deep you can go with the research and how quick you can gain the knowledge. And I obviously said 3.1 billion barrels in place, and the company's come back with sort of 3.6 billion barrels in place.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just absolutely amazing, even to the point I found out what the type of rock would be the sort of shale play. So I was able to work out permeabilities, porosities, etc. before the sort of company announced it via the RNSs.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I found staggering about it all, Stephen, was the fact that you did all this research over 600 hours, and then because of what you did, you then were subjected to a lot of abuse on Twitter, unnecessarily, may I add, because you were seen to be either too accurate or too close to the company, a company that you didn't know anything about, and all you were doing was, to all intents and purposes, forensic research, which you then gave away to enable other people to make a lot of money, you know, from 8AT and investing in 8AT.
What I would say, you know, practically speaking, I don't tell people to hit the buy button or hit the sell button.
Yeah.
You know, that's first and foremost.
It's information sharing, yeah.
Yeah. What I was able to do for a lot of people is basically show them the facts, show them the figures, show them the rock type, show them the depths, the permeabilities, the porosities, equate that to everything that was on the RNS data, and basically say, you know, this is what we're hitting. If it was a gas play, then the types of hydrocarbons, i.e. the gas molecules or the oil molecules, whilst they were drilling, that would be different. So we haven't got an immature area or an overly mature area. We are in the sweet spot. Things are, as Paul Brzezinski, who basically has done all the sort of legwork, he sat there for 6 years planning this drill. Even to the point he's drilled a spot sort of 100 meters away from where they've previously drilled, but not down to the same depth. So he knew precisely where he wanted to put that drill bit.
He knew
precisely what was going to be down there. And, you know, his research and his knowledge base is, you know, there to be followed. Why would you not want to follow someone, you know, that found the Eagle Ford shale play, which was pumping out at 320,000 barrels per day?
That's very, very.
Reference the abuse on, you know, social media, etc.
Yeah.
Some people could be jealous of it.
That's a good point. Yeah.
You know, several hundred people on Twitter, obviously have thanked me. They've offered me drinks. I've been offered holidays. I've been offered, you know, an untold sort of amounts of, you know, gifts or anything. And I'm sat there like, no. I'm happy. I've got the time to do the research.
Yeah.
I've got the get up and go to do the research. If I want to share that with people, if they want to listen to it, absolutely brilliant. You know, if they've made money off the back of it, it's them that's told themselves, I'm happy in here. I'm going to put some money with the company. A lot of people got in sort of around the sort of 0.5p, 0.7p.
Yeah.
And the market makers dropped the price all the way down to sort of the 0.3 pence area.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were going to sell at that point.
Yeah.
Because they thought the markets know something here.
Yes.
And, you know, because of my reassurance, a lot of people popped up at that point in time. So as and when the share price started to rise, a lot of people were saying, well, it's not going to go any higher on this.
Yeah.
I did, when I joined one of the 880 chat rooms, was basically put a price point that I suspected it was going to be hit. And that was 4p by the end of February.
Yeah.
And I was 10 days late on that guess, and that was back in December.
Yeah.
So, you know, I based what we should have and what their share prices have done. So, you know, you can be comfortable with your investments with that sort of level of knowledge, that level of research. And, you know, yes, I put in an awful lot of time and effort, but that sort of de-stressed me with the company.
Yeah.
No. You know, and that to me is what it's about.
Yeah.
Some people do an hour's worth of research and say, yeah, okay, that'll do.
Yeah.
With me, I was sort of sat there, you know, I've got an awful lot of money on a AIM stock. Still high risk, still amazingly high reward, though. So I wanted to protect my investment by doing that sort of level of knowledge and research. So I'm sort of more than happy to do that. And, you know, by spreading the news, again, it's made me even happier.
Yes.
And again, I've got in with the right crowd, and here I am now doing podcasts and, you know, giving my sort of thoughts and views.
No, that's absolutely, you've had a fantastic journey, Stephen, and you've only been on Twitter, I think less than 6 months, and the following you've got now, and the wealth you've generated via your research, for the ones that saw your research has been accurate, is absolutely phenomenal, mate. So fantastically well done to you, and long may it continue, sir.
Yeah, definitely. Don't call me sir, that's my dad's name.
I won't do that again.
It's Steve or mate.
I'll stick with Steve. Now, Steve, obviously you touched on the fact that you've got a 70-30 split in your portfolio, because you want to have a bit of adventurous money as well, and you've got your core holdings for the long term. So how do you go about picking your core holdings? Do you have any filters that you use?
Practically speaking, In the initial thing, it was basically punt money, you know, didn't do any research. I thought I'll just dip a toe in the water, you know, and see what's what. Everyone else had made money before, so I just followed the crowd.
Yeah.
Now, what I did back then was with obviously friends around me, people that I trusted, and people that I would obviously, you know, trust with my life.
Yeah.
So, you know, thankfully, when I dipped my toe, I did it in a big way.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was cash rich at that point in time, you know, no overheads in my life or anything like that. So I was more than happy to sort of dip my toe on, you know, what I considered to be safe, because everyone around me was telling me it was safe. Then, you know, thankfully it came off. But I look back now and I sort of sit here thinking, how stupid was I, you know, by gaining knowledge, by sitting there and looking at things, probably one out of 10 drills, actually it's oil. And all you've got to do is go back and have a look at Rockhopper. The share price was up at sort of £5, £5.50 a share. It's now down below a pound. So, you know, and they've got oil. But now, you know, reference the portfolio, I will only invest in stocks that have got a sound sort of background, a sound asset in play, and or if they haven't got an asset in play, the upside has got to be extremely good, and it's got to be vindicated by sort of CEOs putting the money where their mouth is.
Yeah, that's a skin in the game, as we call it.
Again, if they've put their money in the company and they haven't done it at a point which is sort of below the shareholders' sort of share price, if you like. So, i.e., if a company's at 5p and they say, hey, I've just bought a million shares at 1p, that means they can sell them instantaneously and make a profit.
Exactly.
What I like to see is either the CEOs of the company or boards of directors buying in at the normal share price, not at a discount to the market. So, you know, the companies I look at, I like to see if the CEOs are honorable. Have they got a good standing? Have they done it before? If they've done it before, have they done well? If they haven't done it before, are they bringing advisors on board? So, you know, when you have a look at companies like 880, you've got a gentleman called Steve Staley on board who has taken a company called Cove, and he took them from 8 pence and sold the company off for £2.30 a share. So when you have a look at that sort of background and they brought him on as an advisor, you've got a good standing CEO, doesn't ramp the stock, doesn't de-ramp the stock.
Yeah.
He's bought in. Even to the point overnight, he's bought in another $75,000 worth of shares, and he's bought them on the open market, not at a discount price. So he's not abusing his position. He's making the shareholders happy. What is there not to like about that CEO? Then you have a look at the board of directors and everyone that's advising him. You know, very, very sound company. And you know, Paul Brzezinski on board as well, with sort of a small holding in the company via his joint venture partner. So, you know, it's a good way to look at your stocks and shares.
Yeah, especially if
they've got an asset in play and they've got their own money. Then, you know, that's a sound investment. You lose money, they lose money, their reputation, they're swept off to one side.
No, I think that's a fair point, mate, because we know, I think we touched on this in the conversation we had previously, in the sense that there's so many people out there and they carte blanche will just taint the whole market and say, you know, it's a casino or AIM junk and all the rest of it. And they don't realize there's lots of companies and individuals working hard to produce and generate income for not only people's jobs, but for the market per se. And that is tainted by the odd or the small minority of companies, which are lifestyle companies, which the CEOs are only interested in their own salaries and remunerations and options and warrants and so on and so forth. So it's good to have some companies out there that are looking after investors and are interested in the long term and not the short term gain.
Yeah, that's it. Again, you've got companies, as soon as they list on the stock market, as soon as they've got the initial public offer sort of out there, they'll just award themselves $150,000, you know, pay packet by way of shares. And you sat there like, hang on, you haven't done anything. Why are you sort of rewarding yourself?
Yeah, that happens a lot.
You know, roughly the same as sort of the banks and what they're doing to their sort of CEOs, if you like.
Yeah, very much.
They go in, do 5 hours work a week. Company makes money because everyone else is making money and people are, you know, taking out their products.
Yeah.
And he awards himself to, you know, a large bonus every year. It's
scandalous.
It's madness.
Yeah.
You know.
All right. See, let's talk about some of the. You know, you've talked. You've done your research. You've shared all this research. Obviously, there's some stocks out there that you're interested in, and you've done thorough research on, and you've found the directors that meet your criteria, that got skin in the game, and fundamentally sound and got potential. Is there any of those that you want to share with us that you're happy to discuss?
Yeah, definitely.
Go for it.
I mean, as everyone knows, I do a regular podcast with Alex from LSE Share Talk.
Yeah.
And I've got basically the sound holding, you know, my main core holding in 8AT.
Yeah.
I've got a split of money in Lloyds and MRO.
Yeah.
Lloyd share price, it was up at 95p, sold out, and it sort of drifted back down to sort of below 60p.
Yeah.
We had conversations previous where I said, you know, when it hits that sort of 55p, that's when I'm going to be buying in. So I set my buy price for 56p, sold some of my MRO because that had gone up quite a nice amount.
Yeah.
Put that there. The fill order got bought into. And then, you know, moments later, Lloyd's announced that they're going to start paying a dividend again. So share price has gone up. 8AT, I've got my main holding there. 7.6 million shares, and I'm happy to leave them long term.
Yeah.
When, you know, certain circumstances are happening in my sort of personal life, reference work.
Yeah.
So I sort of sat there and thought, right, I need to, you know, obviously realizing 8AT is a long term investment.
Yeah.
I wanted to make some money to basically put into other stocks and shares and companies.
Of course.
So I basically opened a trading pot and started trading initially on my sort of main holding, which was 8AT. That was the one that was going to start rising majorly. So I've put money into there. I've then made money on AAE. And then I've had a look for other companies with solid assets. And again, obviously via the chat rooms, absolutely brilliant people there. They've recommended several sort of companies, and I've gone around, I've had a look at several sort of mining companies, and I've done the research on Kerr's Resources.
Yep.
And I've done the research on a company called Noricum. Now obviously, with LSE Share Talks, we've met the CEOs. We've been able to go up and talk to them, ask them direct questions, put them on the spot, find out who they are as people. So, you know, before any of that was known, I've basically seen that Kerr's has got a contract in place. They've got lease agreements in place. They've got the mining licenses in place. All they were doing is basically just awaiting the sort of start date to get the equipment there. Bucket and spade job. They knew what the grades of gold were in the ground from previous data, so there was going to be no cost expenditure. And they've got other assets that they were going to scale up the sort of business model on. So I start small, get cash in the bank, use that cash to build another mine. Get another mine up and going, bigger resources, quicker cash in the bank, start again, you know. So basically you're scaling the business up. And I sat there and thought, right, so no further placings. Cash is going to be sort of instant and sound business model, scaling up the business, small area first. So they're not going to go out and say, right, we need 10 million quid to start mining this absolutely massive resource over there. They were not there for sort of shareholders dilution. They said, right, we're going to start small, scale it up. And then if you have a look at the commodity prices, the mining for gold, the gold price has come down drastically from sort of recent levels. And then if you do a bit of research into the catalysts on the gold price, it's always during a downturn in the market. People see it as a safe haven.
Yeah.
So I sort of sat there and said, right, profitability now is going to be sort of 800 Australian dollars per ounce of gold. We knew what the gold grade was coming out of the ground. We knew what the costs were. They're going to be making a profit instantaneously. And lo and behold, they've started doing their thing. On their Twitter account, they've got a massive slab of gold. I'm surprised the guy holding it can actually lift it up. So, you know, absolutely sound company, sound managers in place. So, and then my other one, they've got a lot more resources in place and a lot longer licensing agreement. Now, it's called Noricum. And when I searched the CEO of the company, he seemed totally honourable, totally respectable. But when you have a look at the people running the company, there's a gentleman who's basically the main sort of man, Greg's right-hand man, and he's called Martin.
Right.
Now, when I did research into him, he's previously worked for a mining company called Lundin, who are an absolutely massive, massive company. And he's worked in that region and that area for the previous 10 years. So, and he's actually left the big, massive company and gone into Noricum, again, put his money where his mouth is.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's one of the sort of main reasons for my liking to invest in him. He's the one going out. He's the one talking to the old miners that used to work in the area. He's the one doing everything sort of in the background, you know, and absolutely, again, brilliant business model. They've identified three areas that they're interested in out of 17 they've got on the books. And again, we only know to a very, very shallow depth what's in play. And, you know, massive resource in place already just on those sort of small areas. But again, they've invested in something called an IP machine, which can scan 400 meters into the ground. So on the back of that, I was like, right, I like what you're doing. I like the business model. I like the fact that you're not just happy looking at what you know you've got. You're looking for more.
Yeah.
You know. So again, they're being very savvy and they want to get all the information out there. So again, it's a sound business model, sound company, sound board of directors, and they've got all the contractual agreements and licenses in place. So again, sound asset. What's not to like?
I mean, what I find staggering about what you've just told me there is that the guy you mentioned, Mark Martin, he's left Lundin Gold, yeah, which is listed on the Canadian Stock Exchange, worth near enough 600 million Canadian dollars. Yeah, so he's opted to leave that company to go into a fresh company that's essentially starting up a new drills and all the rest of it. That's worth under 10 million, you know, UK sterling. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a big step to take when you think, you know, when things are going well at Lundin, he could be getting the equivalent of Noricum Gold's valuation as a bonus when things are going well.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, Lundin had invested a lot of more time and effort in other plays in different areas.
Yeah.
So they basically sidestepped this area to go elsewhere. But Martin had already done the legwork. He's got the knowledge. He's got the background, you know, so he knows what's what. He knows what's there and in the ground. He knows the working regime. He knows the sort of local business owners where they're going to take all of the sort of ore for them to extract all of the minerals that they're going to be selling. So, you know, he knows that business model. So if you've done 10 years work in a business background in a certain area and you know there's money to be made and the company you're working for says, sorry, we're diverting here, we're going to go off and do this, you know, it's a point in time there where you've got to make a decision, you know. And if, you know, why would you want to leave a massive company where you're getting very well paid and massive bonuses, etc., etc. Well, why would you want to leave that safety net?
It's obvious, isn't it? Sometimes you have to take that leap of faith and seize opportunities.
Yeah.
Like you say, he's now got the opportunity to make some game-changing sort of discoveries for Norikam. Having done that legwork for 10 years, he's like thinking, well, this project was my baby, and now I'm going to make sure that it does well for everyone concerned. And that's going to be to the benefit, obviously, now of Norikam shareholders and not London shareholders. And we've seen that happen before. I think it was actually Cove, actually. Where was it BP or Shell that sold the assets, and then Cove bought off them and then made the game-changing discovery and sold it on for a couple of £1 million. £1 billion. So it can be done.
Yeah, that's it.
Might be another occasion that it happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, so no, I wish him well. Now, Steve, I've got a couple more questions for you. You've mentioned a couple of stocks. I wanted to talk to you about the what has been your wisest investment decision to date. I know you've made several, but are you going to let's say other than 880?
What I would say the wisest investment decision is doing research on stocks.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to say it three times. Research, research, research. If there's nothing to research, then the question is, should you be risking your money? If you've got money to spare, fine, so be it.
Yeah.
You know, you can make money.
Yeah.
But if you've got something to research and you can put a price on it, you can work out what the price should be. You should be able to work out what the share price could be going to. You can then make decisions based around that, along that company's journey, because you'll have the sound working knowledge. It's almost to the point where you can almost be working for the company. To, you know, you can say, I'm expecting, for instance, Carers. I was expecting Prince of Wales Mine roughly end of year, beginning of next year. They've done a placing, 1.25 million, and they're going to get that mine up and running. So straight away, on the license terms, they've added basically, you know, several million onto sort of what the share price should be overall. So, you know, they've used that placing to fund getting, you know, they're going to get a 5-6-fold increase in that money. And, you know, that straight away is a reassessment. So again, it's back down to research. What did that mean? What were my initial thoughts? What were my initial figures?
Yeah.
Oh, I was expecting 4 years worth of mining there on the initial license. That can obviously be extended, but now they're going to get 4 years and 6 months worth. So does that alter my end game? Does that alter my goal? If obviously I've targeted a slice point, does that mean that my slice point's coming earlier? Am I happy leaving my money in that company for a longer point in time? Am I going to be slicing earlier? You know, depends what the news is, depends on your initial research. But again, it's like Chinese whispers. If everything is sound, everything is kept simple, you can make that decision straight away. So, you know, a lot of people hear the word placing and want to sell out. If you've done your background knowledge and research on the company, if you read the word placing, it doesn't matter about the extra shares to any sort of high degree, because all those extra shares are going to be swallowed up by sort of sound and savvy investors. So, you know, straight away, you look at what the data says, you have a look at why they've done it, and, you know, it's to fund further investment. So it's not a case of, you know, companies that have got nothing there. You know, the CEO's on a big pay packet and they've got massive administration costs because they're flying halfway around the world to have caviar and champagne with someone to schmooze them. It's a case of, you know, we're not keeping the lights on.
Yeah.
Not doing this for lifestyle. It's to further fund and further aid the shareholders and the business.
No, indeed. It's about having the... It's about once you've done your research, you know the good companies, and therefore, if they're doing a placement, they're looking to actually make a vast return on that additional money that you're being asked to put in as a shareholder in the investment. So if you put in a pound, you're looking to actually make that £2 or £3 in the return over a period of time, whether that be 1 year or 2 years hence. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. And that's what it's about. You know, obviously, to answer your question, research. That way you can be truly happy with your investment decisions and the companies you invest in. If there becomes a point in time, you can almost read sort of body language via the RNSs.
Yeah.
If there becomes a point in time you're not entirely happy, then, you know, it gives you an opportunity or a chance to, you know, draw your money out if that's your decision.
Yeah. I'll go back to your 600 hours of research there. And I'm going to quote George Bernard Shaw, the Irish dramatist here. And he says, "All great truths begins as blasphemies." So when you were digging for 600 hours to try and find all this information, you kept questioning everything, and hence the reason why you carried on and ended up doing 600 hours plus on 8AT. But all those blasphemies that you initially found turned out to be truths. And that's how you made your monies and how you've got now the position you're in now, where people are coming to you to ask for your advice, asking you to do research on their own companies, as I know some CEOs have done so. And that's a phenomenal progress, Steve, from somebody who's not a trained geologist to be able to say, actually, I've done as much research as the guys working in that company, and I've been proved correct. You know.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, obviously, touching on what you've said there, I've had CEOs send information over and say, would you mind having a look at this? So again, I've sat there, I've had a look, I've put my sort of thoughts and questions across. And to the point, one of them asked me, you know, could you have a look at this? They've sent over some information, and I've gone back to him. I said, right, I need to know X, Y, and Z to be able to work out the questions you are asking me.
Yeah.
And they've come back and said, you do know what you're speaking about. You do know what you're on about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was just a test. Do you mind if I contact you in the future?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's, I'm sort of more than happy for people to try and catch me out. I'm more than happy to, you know, lend a hand, answer questions.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if you're a CEO or if you're just starting out, you know. Yeah. I've helped several people who are just getting into investments. I've taught them, obviously, long-term holding is better than sort of short-term gains. Invest in companies that have got sound resources in play, and you know you're going to make your money, as opposed to potentially putting some money on a shell company. You know, it's all about risk versus reward. If there's not a lot of risk, but you can work out that the process of that company is going to be obviously a massive reward, then you know it's just about finding the niches in the market.
Yeah, indeed. And I reiterate what Stephen said, that you can only find the niches and the nuggets if you do lots of research. There's, you know, piggybacking on other people's research is not the way to do it, because you haven't got a sound strategy there of knowing exactly what it is that the other person's found. And we've spoken before, Stephen, about these other individuals who are buying into cash shells. And as we all know, shell suits were from the 80s, and if you went anywhere near them with a match, the tendency was for them to go up in flames.
I'm normally the one with the analogies. That's a good one though. I mean, basically it's risk versus reward. If that, you know, going back to my previous point, if there is no asset, should you be risking your money on it? And you know, if you want to do that, if that's the way you want to make your money, absolutely brilliant. Back to your point about obviously social media, and you know, people are saying, oh, look at this company, it's going to be, you know, the next sort of big player. You know, it's roughly similar to one that's done something previous.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter if you know it. You think it's going to do something previous. What you need to do is say to yourself, it's a different company. It's got a different amount of shares in play. It's got a different market cap. It's in a different region of the world. You know, and just absolutely everything. You know, if I said to you, I'm going to invest in a building company that make floating houses, but they're based in the middle of Russia where there's no water, it's just snow and ice everywhere, would you invest your money? No.
Absolutely not, no.
You know, you've got to be savvy with your research, simple as, you know, two companies that look similar are probably totally polar opposites to each other. So, you know, if anyone says, look at this company, I reckon it could do this, chances are they won't be able to. And again, you can ask them, can you show me your research? Where do you think it's going to do that? How is it similar?
Yeah.
You know, if people are willing to say, you know, have a look at this company, ask them for the knowledge, ask them for the research, ask them for links, then go off and do your own research based on what they've told you, by all means.
Exactly.
Just don't believe anything, you know, even to the point I would say, don't believe anything I do or I say, but if on the back of anything I do and say, people have come to me and said, right, what's this? What's that? And I've gone, right, this is my thoughts. This is why I think this, you know, like 8AT, they said, how do you know that the price of oil out of the ground is going to be, you know, equivalent to sort of around about the $35 to $40 mark?
Yeah.
And I've turned around and said, right, Otto, who's on sort of like the neighboring acreage, they put out a prospectus on their oil plays. Now, if you go back through the Alaskan website data, Otto bought a drill area off Great Bear, who actually owned the land. And when you have a look back again on the Alaskan website, you can go back through the old drill data, you can see that they've hit a shale play in the area. Now, on the presentation, they've actually wrote one key sentence, and it says, all plays in this area are cost productive and profitable in the current oil climate. Now, the presentation's dated December, and the highest the price of fuel was in December was around about $32 from the, off the top of my head.
Yeah.
So I was able to provide them with screenshots of this data, screenshots of the drill data, and a screenshot of the price of oil in December when the prospectus was written. So it's like, there's a shale play, they've got shareholders, they've hit shale, but the difference is we've got Paul Brzezinski telling us we're right bang smack in the middle of the sweet spot. So our oil extraction price could potentially be slightly less than theirs, thus further enhancing, you know, the value, fact that we are going to be at a cash rich point in time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, everyone was sat there worried about the price of oil, but when you look worldwide at what the whole worldwide economy is doing on the price of oil, it was only ever going to go up.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, question absolutely everyone and absolutely everything.
Yeah.
If they can't provide any support and evidence for what they're saying, then they haven't done any research, and this message could have been passed on through 10 people. So, you know, back to the old Chinese whispers, would you want to say openly and publicly if 10 people have had the message before you? Probably not.
No, indeed. Steve, we've covered most of the questions here. I've only got two further questions for you. And one of them being, given the many lessons that you've learned since you started investing, which one would you most wish to share with our LSE Share Talk audience?
Probably don't go onto Twitter because it's just full of abuse.
apart from that one.
Well,
because Twitter can be good. You've done a lot of good with Twitter, Stephen. I know you had a lot for it. But as I said to you before, the fact that you did what you did and then gave it so readily to many other people to say, look, here's my research, go away and do your own research, use that as a primary research or secondary research, make your own decision. That's what a lot of people did. A lot of people didn't do that. And what happened was, for those that missed out on a 3-bagger, 10-bagger, or whatever it was, whenever they thought, oh, I've made a mistake here, Steve was right.
Yeah.
A lot of those people came back and were angry because they had made the mistake of not doing their own research and didn't want to take it on board what you said was at the time accurate. And then obviously the chart and the movement of the price in AAE said its own story, and it's the highest rising stock of the year and will be for I think for the rest of the year as well, given what it's done thus far. And many people missed the boat and they're miffed, because the problem with what you've done is that you gave away generously what you did, and those sort of people never give away anything because they're filled with greed. So that's where the envy and the jealousy comes in, I think.
Yeah, definitely. You know, but basically, back to your original question, I would probably say for a lot of people, you know, the biggest lesson, not necessarily I've learned, but I would say the biggest lesson I've been able to say to other people is trust your research. So.
Sorry, Steve, say again.
Twice 880 is basically dropped. Point where it drops from sort of 0.7 region down to 0.3. The business had been moving along, the drill date was coming out, everything was in line, everything was, you know, as per my expectations. So, you know, sitting as a lot of people did on sort of a 50-60% loss, a lot of people were planning on selling out. And I was just saying to them, look at the fundamentals. Everything is better than expected. So, and a lot of people were sort of saying on social media, sell out, get out, get out.
Yeah.
You know, and I was sat there saying, look, everyone, the research is there, the knowledge is there. They're saying, obviously, that they've got oil in play. We've hit hydrocarbons. Everything is in line with expectations. You know, hold, be patient,
yeah.
Trust the research, trust your fundamentals, you know. And again, Dave Wall went onto a podcast. He mentioned that there is water down in the deeper sections. If you had done your research on oil stocks, then you would know that there's oil and water in every sort of drill.
Yeah.
So there's a water content mixed in with it. So just on the back of that, the share price dropped sort of 40-50% on the day, just because he had mentioned that on a podcast. So, you know, and again, everyone was coming to me saying, you know, we've hit water. And I was like able to say to people, you know, calm them down and reassure them, this is normal, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
So, and again, lots of people sort of sat there and watched the share price go down. They were like, okay, I'm going to hold. I'm happy. You've been right so far. And I'm like, that's your decision. And then obviously the share price went from strength to strength and sort of surpassed absolutely everyone's expectations.
Indeed.
But then it hit my expectations, albeit 10 days late.
Yeah, no, but the beauty of it is, Stephen, that is that you did your research, you had the plan, you knew from the 3 billion plus sort of payload that it potentially could have, that if everything went to plan in the market and the directors did what they should have done, that payload would come in. And that's the beauty of doing your research. That's the importance of doing research, because it gives Definitely. You faith to continue through all the noise and to just plow on, because you've got to have that. Because if you haven't got the resolve behind you and you're just following noise of the market, you won't have the gumption and the spine to actually carry on the journey. And then you're looking at yourself and thinking, oh, I had it at 0.5 and I bailed out at 0.3 and it's now sitting at 3.9. And then you're cursing your luck and then you don't trust yourself going into the next trade. You know,
that's it.
And you then have a habit of repeating the same mistakes I made previously.
And that's what it's about. Do your research, have a look at other companies that have done roughly similar to it, but then base it upon your own company. Base it upon sentiment, because a lot of AIM stocks are sentiment driven as well. You know, if it's flavor of the month, it will make money. If it isn't, then it's not going to do anything. So it's, you know, very much a case of, you know, as you said.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure you've seen it on Twitter. I've had some discussions with some certain individuals who every now and then just come out with random statements like AIM is full of junk, you know, and I had to put out the London Stock Exchange AIM 20 report that was out last January and basically repeat to them, look, when this started 20 years ago, AIM had 10 companies that were valued at £82 million, right? And they went on to peak at £97 billion. Now, you know, when you're looking at companies like Domino Pizza, ASOS, Nichols, Mattioli Woods, some solid core companies out there, you're always going to get cyclical stocks, resources stocks, who go through these cycles and need monies and will go up 100% and come down 75%. But this is what happens. This is the churn of markets, and you've got to be ready to move with the markets when it's getting momentum and come out of them when the momentum is failing. But if you've done your research, you'll know which stocks those are. And that's the truth of it all.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
So,
oh Stephen, I've got sorry for my little rant, but there you go.
No, that's the way it is, and it's a case of getting knowledge and information out there, and you know, that's what we're here to do. We're happy to give up our spare time.
Yeah.
We don't get paid for it. No. So, you know, if you want to have a rant, mate, you carry on.
Right. If there was one thing you could change, Stephen, regarding the investing landscape, what would that be?
I would basically say the animosity on social media. You know, everyone's here to make money, and I think it's vastly unfair for sort of people to gloat when people aren't making money. But at the same point in time, there should be sort of better restrictions on sort of certain individuals, certain groups, and you know, just so people are protected better.
Yeah.
So, you know, for instance, if someone's lied to you or manipulated the market and you know you've been sort of caught out on it, you should be able to report them and they should be removed and banned from social media.
Yeah, some individuals have been, Steve, as you've noticed, some accounts have come and gone and they've come back. You know, certain individuals have come back again and then they fade away again. And you know, so you know, it's a discipline thing, really.
Yeah, that's it. And you know, it, same with, you know, instead of researching companies, research people.
Yes,
if they're sat there day in day out screaming and shouting about sort of 100 different stocks. Do they know the ins and outs and the sort of workings and goings on of those stocks? I can only research, you know, several stocks at any sort of given moment in time.
Yeah.
So to be able to sort of sit there and talk about 100 different companies a week, you just don't know what's happening with them. You can't know what's going on with them.
Yeah.
Could they be trusted, you know? And you've got to sort of question absolutely everything on social media, and as I said earlier, including myself.
Yeah. Well, it's highly unlikely that if they're researching 100 stocks, that they would have put the 600 hours that you've put in on each of those individual stocks.
Yeah, so, there's not enough hours in the year to do that.
Exactly. So they're basically trying to you know, to cast as wide a net and just you know, the scattergun approach, I think, is the best analogy to use there, and hope that they get a couple of wins out of those 100. So I do a lot of research, Stephen, and I don't think I've come across anybody that does as much research as you do. So that's absolutely commendable, mate. Hence the reason why some entities, including companies, are coming to you now for additional research on what they're doing. So that's absolutely fantastic. Now, Stephen, I've covered all the questions I wanted to ask you. I didn't know if there's anything, any subject matter you wanted to just touch on briefly before we close, or anything you wanted to express or share with LSE Share Talks listeners.
Basically, you know, if there's any thoughts, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, I'm an open book. Use me and abuse me. You know, I am, as most can tell, you know, I'm very much down to earth. I'm happy to help anyone in any research, any questions. You know, even if it's down to simple things like terminologies of different things.
Yeah.
You know, I'm able to help. If I don't know the answer, I probably know people that do know the answer.
Okay.
So, you know, LSE Share Talks is there as a go-between between companies and investors. And I see myself as part of that team.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm here to help. I know obviously other people have got sort of major jobs and time constraints. You know, there might be a gentleman out there, family of three, you know, three kids, wife there as well. He might be out working 60 hours a week. He might have excess money, wants to put money in stocks and shares, wants to ask a few quick questions. I don't mind at all. So I've had people on the phone at 2 o'clock in the morning asking me questions on bits and bobs from Australia. So, you know, I'm more than happy at any point in time to lend a hand and help people. Obviously, don't give advice, but I help them help themselves
make
an investment decision.
No, that's absolutely fantastic, Stephen. I think I'm going to have to throw this quote in here, Steve, because you know I love my quotes. And this about sums you up. This was said by one of our previous prime ministers, Benjamin Disraeli. The greatest good you can do for another is not just to share your riches, but to reveal to him his own. And I think, especially with AZT, that's exactly what you've done, mate. So absolutely fabulous work that you've done. Absolutely fabulous that you've shared it. And you know what? Above all things that you've done, Stephen, you've done it all with grace and a huge lump of humility, which we don't see often enough, mate.
No, that's it. I mean, obviously, to reiterate his quote there, I don't see myself as making money for people. I see myself as helping people gain a knowledge base.
Yeah.
So people can help themselves. I mean, for me, it isn't about making money. The making money bit of stocks and shares is a byproduct.
Yeah.
For me now, it's very much a byproduct.
Yeah.
So some people have got a couple of £100 to invest. Other people have got hundreds of thousands of pounds to invest.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't about the amount of money and the amount of gains you're making. It's about the journey along the way.
Yeah.
You know, so by helping people, I've got a smile on my face, you know, and, you know, yes, the money's helped people. Obviously, when the sort of main news came in on 880, people have cashed it in because they've met the targets, they met the goals.
Yeah,
they've been able to move house, pay mortgages off, retire early, fund their kids for weddings, you know, and it's literally that journey and that story.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't done it for them. They've done it for themselves. Exactly. But
so
obviously,
it's not
the, you know,
it's an enabler, Steve. For my background working with kids and people in the community, which I still do a lot of these days, it's about being an enabler. Are you with me?
Yeah, definitely.
You've done.
That's it. It's the same as if you can do something for a charity and that charity helps out one person, your job's done.
Yeah.
But with me, I've got over 1,000 followers on Twitter, and I've obviously got a lot of people that follow LSE Share Talk, and I've got a lot of contacts from sort of previous chat groups and chat rooms I've been on.
Yeah.
So I've probably got best part of sort of 2,500 to 3,000 people.
Yeah.
And most of them are in sort of regular contact with me. So, You know, it's very much a case of I haven't helped out just one person. I've helped out an awful lot of people. And if I can help out more people or the same people going on in life, then, you know, I'm more than happy to do that.
No, that's absolutely fantastic, Stephen. Now, Stephen, we've completed the Conquest Corner thing. I just wanted to reiterate and say thank you ever so much for the kindness that you've shown. As you know, I always put out mindfulness quotes and thank yous regarding my retweets and people that have liked my quotes and my tweets. So I'll be putting out special mentions, obviously, when this podcast comes out. And I just wanted to say thank you again from the LSE Share Talk team for your continued support and sharing of knowledge and support that you've given us throughout the time we've been in existence. I'll sign off now and I'll speak to you again soon. And I'll try to remember not to call you sir.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Stephen. Take care. God bless, mate.
Will do, Conquest. Thank you very much. Thanks. And thank you for listening, everyone.
You're more than welcome. Bye-bye, Stephen.
Cheers, Conquest. Bye.